Good morning, folks. It's time for Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show about political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and the nation at large. Join us for a stimulating, thought-provoking discussion. You'll get the facts as we focus on the real challenges facing Arizonans. Good morning, folks. Steve Williamson here. We're going to be stimulating today. Sitting across from me is my beloved co-host.
Yes, and Mike Cosentino here. You're going to be stimulating. Well, that's how you get heart conditions, though. You don't want to overstimulate here. But
Steve's going to be stimulating. You're going to be thought provoking.
I am going to be thought provoking.
What are you going to be, Gary? Silent?
Not silent, but I don't know what I'll be.
This will
be
too late to be silent, Gary. Okay.
That's too late to be silent, Gary. We have a studio full of folks this morning.
We have Paul Schwartz. Paul, you want to tell us a little bit about yourself?
Bad boy, Paul.
I invited Paul. And we thought Paul would be a great guy to have on because he said his favorite movie was Network, where the guy opens the window.
I'm mad as hell. I'm not going to tell you that anymore.
This is the kind of guy we need on the radio.
Well, besides that, he pissed off all the local Republicans. So that's you got to have him on a Democratic Perspective.
We should give him a bouquet of flowers.
At least a microphone.
Yes. Yeah,
I'm a disabled veteran of the Monument effort.
And for folks that don't know, the city council voted 9-1 not to endorse the monument. A couple of they defended KSB from all the slander, the defamation, and the lies that were told about it. But at the same time, they felt there wasn't support enough in the community or understanding what the monument is to support it. You were there from the beginning, Paul. So I guess let's take a quick look back. When I got back into the country in July, the internet was filled with the most vicious, crazy attacks on the whole monument idea. The ignorance was astonishing. They were going to end Jeep tours. They were going to fence the monument. They were going to seize the water. All of it absolute nonsense, but it seems to have won the day.
Yeah, it wasn't really ignorance. It was simply lying. There is a difference. It was intentional. And they used the kind of tactics that Herr Goebbels would be very happy to have seen used. It was just a big lie, and they winged it. And they seem to have won with it.
And you could go back on KSB's mistakes and stuff, but KSB is a little local indigenous organization that's only KSB. And they brought in Americans for Prosperity, and they brought in Arizona Liberty. They brought in about a lot of money. When I talked to people in the environmental community around the country, when I was looking for people to interview, none of them had even heard of the monument. I mean, KSB had not been able to reach out to anyone.
Well, we do want to mention our guest last week, Barbara Luttrell, said it was KSB was part of a coalition that supported the monument. So we want to make sure that we say on this show that it wasn't just KSB.
No,
there was a coalition of groups that supported the National Monument for the 160,000 acres around Sedona, Arizona.
Well, actually, it was KSB and DOOR. There were no other involved groups. It really was KSB, and it has been from the beginning, and that was the problem.
We always let KSB lead the charge when they wanted a national scenic area, because they had done it before, and they had done it again, and they had done it again, and so they had the manpower and the expertise. Plus, I think the reason, and Paul's referring to DOOR, which is Democrats of the Red Rock, is Democrats of the Red Rocks wanted to take a back seat because they didn't want to turn this into a partisan issue, because it shouldn't have been a partisan issue, should it, Paul?
No, it was non-political. That was the way it was from the beginning. It was intentionally non-political, and I think that's where they got snookered, because on the other side, it was pure political.
Yeah, they sure made it political in a hurry.
By the time I got back in July, the internet was filled with the most irrational stuff. It was all, it sounded to me like people who never walked in the woods, you know, or they had some commercial interest. I think many of the New Age folks do commercial tours without paying any fees and stuff. And they thought that they didn't know what a monument was, but they used fear to help shut it down. And then they were joined by our dear friends in the Tea Party who came in with a whole bunch of money. The gutless editor of the Sedona Red Rock News has still not published my letter. Yeah. I mean, you talk about puerile and callow. I mean, he's afraid to publish a letter about the phone robocalls going out to Republicans asking them to show up for demonstrations. I mean, it's a shock. And some of those, it's not just an crazies on the internet. It's also, you know, much more organized forces.
So you don't think the Republican Men's Club of Sedona is making those robocalls?
Did they? No. Okay, no. Did they even say anything? I didn't hear from them at all. Did Republican Men's Club say anything?
No.
I was just trying to think of a local.
Those guys are pretty rational. I mean, they're very, very conservative, but they're not, you know, they don't wear tinfoil hats like you do.
The thing they seem to trade on, the opponents was fear. And, you know, what little I heard over the whole issue was what might happen, what could happen. You know, the government could take over the land and put in all sorts of restrictions. And it got to the point where it was irrational. I mean, it's like, I could be struck by lightning tomorrow, but I'm still going to get up in the morning.
It was whack-a-mole time. I mean, they would put out one thing and you would say, well, look, I don't really against the Park Service, but the Park Service has not taken over a national monument of this kind since the Clinton administration. There are no cases where they've done it. And you have, and the example I use, folks, is from the newspaper. The Forest Service is only running 9 monuments, so they can't run one more. All you had to do was go and see what kind of job they were doing. Given their budgetary restraints, what kind of job were they doing? It was an easy question. So that monument seems to be on hold for now. There are 2 others in the area that are being sponsored, right, guys, mostly by the tribes. One of them they're calling the Grand Canyon Heritage National Monument. It would protect the watershed of the Grand Canyon from uranium mining and other kinds of development. The other one is, and I've been to the area of Bears Ears up in Utah. It's an extraordinarily beautiful area, sacred to 2 or 3 of the different tribes. It's a religious area. Mm-hmm. And the tribes have gotten together to try to preserve those areas. I must say the people in Utah are treating the land disrespectfully. They're taking their ATVs up these delicate creeks and ripping stuff up, you know, and they're mistreating and stealing the artifacts and stuff. And so the tribes are rightfully angry about all this and have their own proposal. Is what we wanted to shift today when Gary and Mike's suggestion was move away from talking about monuments. Because what happened here with the monument, the same people are our representatives, like Paul Gosar, and part of the Freedom Caucus in the Congress. Now, it's hard for Democrats to understand what's going on with this huge Republican fight where nobody wants to be Speaker of the House, which is the most prestigious position.
Before we get to the Republican Congress, are we, on Democratic perspective here, pronouncing the Sedona National Monument Movement dead?
No. It's in high hiatus. Now, one of the things that people had no idea was how national monument worked. Anybody, as I've said now 2,000 times, anybody can propose a national monument.
Right.
You have as I told people on the internet, none of these petitions have any legal standing, either for or against it. It's decided. See, the key word here is national. National monuments are decided based on national interest.
So it's still going.
I don't know. The land is held in trust by the federal government. It is a federal land. Let's ask Paul. Is it still going?
Oh yes, yeah. Because it's not a beauty contest. It has nothing to do with whether the City Council of Sedona likes it or not. It's going ahead. It will go to the White House as planned. And what happens then is The White House will take copies of it and give it to Interior and Agriculture and the Environmental, the President's Environmental Council, and Legal, and they will go through the document and come back with suggestions, and then it will be returned to the committee here, and the suggestions will be incorporated in the revised plan. And that plan will go to the president, and the president signs it or doesn't. That's all there is to it.
It's October now. Is it safe to say they're still a year away from that process that you're talking about?
That's right.
Because,
yeah.
I mean, he's going to be in office until January 2017.
That's true.
That's typically when all the past presidents have signed, or at least, you know, as they're leaving, they sign the National Monument Proclamations.
Right, and it's in competition with not only the monuments I mentioned, but there are other monuments in California in the works. There's one in Maine where the government's been given 100,000 acres of land about, Paul's probably had good Mount Katahdin, in Maine. So there's I guess, a bunch of national monuments in the works.
And once again, to be clear, the goal was preservation. I mean, but there's going to be a theme on this morning's show. I guess it would be fear. The Republican use of fear in the decision making process, both at the local level, the state level, and the national level. But the idea was that people love Sedona. They think it's a special, special place. And they wanted to find a way to preserve it. The other side, the people that were against the monument, said they had the same goal. And some people believe they, once again, were just outright lying, that they didn't have a preservation goal. They had a use goal. They wanted to get to use the land for their for gain.
It's not just here, Mike. It's not just in Arizona that the legislatures repeatedly passed acts trying to seize public land. The big seizure in the works now is in Utah, where there, I think it's a representative named Young is trying to seize public land. And the people supporting it are our usual friend at ALEC, you know, American Legislative Exchange Council. Americans for Prosperity, the people who are doing the robocalls here in
the Koch-supported group.
Koch-founded group. It's the same guys. But I do think we should turn to I mean, we can talk about Paul Gosar's extraordinarily dishonest letter that he sent out to supporters,
It's a monthly thing. You can get those if you sign up. You can get his pack of lives, by the month.
I did it for a couple of years, and then I thought, well, he's not my congressman anymore. I don't have to listen to his lies.
Well, you know, with Paul's yank, maybe we can get him on the show. You know,
yeah, I'm sure he'll come.
I always say about Gosar and our legislators is that the next time they tell the truth will be the first time.
So we wanted to talk about it. I don't know how much you want to talk about that, but we wanted to try to understand what's going on. For Democrats, we seem to be, I don't think we're any more left-wing than we were 20 years ago or 40 years ago or last week.
Because we want to feed kids, we seem left-wing. And because we think people should have an education, that education should be close to free, whether we're left-wing. That's a whole different philosophical discussion, which we don't want to get into at 8:30 on Monday morning.
No, we might, Mike, but what happened to the Republicans that they seem to have, to us, sort of gone off a cliff?
Well, the what's happened nationally is, and Gosar is part of it, is the Tea Party has now in the Congress become the Freedom Caucus, as if no one else in Congress believes in freedom. Mm. And there are 42 of them that are basically controlling the entire Republican caucus and Congress in general, because Republicans have the numbers in Congress right now or in the House. And I was reading an article yesterday that I thought was very illuminative, this is the first in the history of Congress, this is the first caucus, minority caucus, that is willing to use any lever possible, government shutdowns, debt ceiling, whatever it's possible, to shut down or to stop things from happening, to basically disable Congress.
Let's talk about the debt ceiling is something that gets raised over and over again. It's a flaw in the way they budget things. And it's been, what, done 20, 30 times without a controversy?
I have a list.
Give me the stats, Gary.
The fascinating thing is this only goes back to 1940, but in those years, like under Eisenhower, 1 year the debt ceiling was lowered. It was lowered $25 billion under Truman. But then once, and it goes up incrementally and occasionally gets lowered, like twice it was lowered under Kennedy. But by the time you get to Reagan, while he was president, the debt ceiling was raised 16 times. And now we're getting into hundreds of billions of dollars each time. So 16 times under Reagan accounted for $1.8 trillion.
In other words, when Reagan cut taxes, and there was the theory was that there would be a sudden burst of tax money and prosperity because he cut taxes. And, of course, it didn't happen. And the other thing is that the economy was not all that great under Reagan, but he had to keep raising debt ceiling limit, right, because he didn't have enough money because he had cut taxes on the wealthy.
That's when, during the Reagan administration, they cut taxes, and then he was escalating the Cold War with money to try to bankrupt the Soviet Union. And, I don't believe that's why the Soviet Union went away, but you can, if you believe that's the case, it worked. But by the time we get to Bush Jr., it was raised 7 times under the W administration for $5.3 trillion. And then when you factor in the aftermath of the Great Recession and all of the two wars that he started that cost us trillions of dollars, that added to the debt and deficit. So if you add in the debt ceiling increases that followed, that actually were under the Obama administration, but they were the result of the Bush administration, it amounts to $10.4 trillion that occurred because of Bush Jr.
Wow.
Yeah.
And that's the deficit hawks that, they still whine about Obama, but he has done more to bring us back from, I'm a tax and spend liberal, but $10 trillion, that's a lot of money.
He cut Obama under the Obama administration. He's cut the deficit faster than any time in history, any other president in history.
It's down to what, 2.5 of the GDP?
1.4?
2.5% of GDP.
It's way down. It's been going down. If you looked at a chart, there's like a line headed down. So the deficit is now the smallest it's been since the Great Crash.
When Obama took office, the deficit was 9.8% of GDP. Now it's 2.5. It's been going down every year.
What we're kind of saying with all the stats and stuff is that it's a great deal of hypocrisy to suddenly use the debt ceiling, having used it when the Republicans were in power over and over again without much controversy, to suddenly use it as a tool to shut down the government, damage the government, seems like a change in the thinking, right?
It only costs us money. Whenever there's an argument over the debt ceiling, it only costs the taxpayers money. This is the one thing that's not understood about the debt ceiling is that if you refuse to raise the debt ceiling, you're not going to necessarily cut the deficit. In all likelihood, you're actually going to increase it. What's going to happen is that we become deadbeats. The debt ceiling only reflects the amount of money that the government has already spent. Congress has already authorized.
Right. It's already authorized money. So the debt ceiling is just spending money that's already been authorized by
absolute
Congress.
Treasonous insanity. of damaging the full faith and credit of the United States.
Of the Freedom Caucus.
By the Freedom, man, we're talking, this has got to be the lowest form of high treason. The other thing, if you know anybody that works in Washington, they are talking about the insanity of just the preparations. Right now, department after department is having to prepare for a possible shutdown. In other words, business serving the public has all become second and third because they are in the process of preparing for a possible shutdown.
Millions of dollars,
so they're spending tens of millions of dollars now because these idiots even think about shutting down the government for this purpose.
Is that clear on that?
Yes.
The magic date for the debt ceiling is that...
I don't think they're technically idiots, Mike.
There's 247 Republicans in the House of Representatives. There's 188 Democrats. They're running the show. We're talking about 42 extreme conservative guys that are calling themselves the
Freedom Caucus.
Freedom Caucus that are calling the shots. We're talking 435 representatives, 100 senators, and these 42 guys are bringing the country to their knees. I know the word terrorist is thrown around a lot these days, but it's
a form of domestic terrorism in my view too.
It's sort of hostage taking. They're taking the health of the American government hostage unless they get their way.
Exactly.
And they've picked issues, as we try to explain about the debt ceiling, that aren't really quite what people think they are. I mean, the debt ceiling is about money that's already been authorized by Congress and whether you're going to spend it all. But if you put the brakes on the minute you begin to develop your plans.
That's right.
It throws things into culture. But I also want to ask Gary, because I know you've been reading about it, maybe Paul too, but they can't seem to have a Speaker of the House. And the way the United States government works, there's a president, vice president, the third person in line or second person in line is the Speaker of the House of Representatives. Are we going to end up with no speaker? Is Boehner going to stay on? What's happening?
The favorite is of the Republican caucus in general is Paul Ryan from Wisconsin, the master tax cutter. And he has so far.
The guy wants to balance the budget, cutting food stamps and Social Security.
He's a liberal guy,
right?
The Freedom Caucus considers him far too liberal.
Tea Party is sending out letters nationally to oppose him as being too, because he's made some compromises over the years with Democrats.
So far, Ryan has refused to take the position. And he probably could get it because of the rest of the Republican caucus. The Tea Party caucus, our friend Gosar included, has voted to support Daniel Webster, a congressman out of Florida, who has made a great deal of out of the what he calls principle over power. What it really amounts to is his, the Freedom Caucus's narrow ideology over traditional, way the Congress works. So they want to try to drive Congress even more. They're willing to shut down the government. They're will over the debt ceiling, which, by the way, comes due on November 3rd. And then they're also willing to shut down the government over funding of Planned Parenthood and a few other issues.
I mean, I think what is the Planned Parenthood part of the budget? It must be 0.5%. It's like
not even.
It's like nothing. And despite what you've heard, the government has not in decades. I think it's called the
Hastert rule.
The Hastert rule has not supported any abortions by Planned
Parenthood. And Hastert, by the way, last week was just sentenced to prison over he admitted to charges that he had molested children while he was a teacher before he was elected to Congress. So
what do you think, Paul? What do you think of this? As you're you're, you know, we're kind of, we come here every week and we think about these things and we read these things and Gary provides, you know, 48 page papers with all the details of every single shutdown of the government in the last 3,000 years.
And
what
some
do you
great
think?
Interviews.
Well, it seems that the Republican Party doesn't exist anymore. In the sense that it used to exist. There doesn't seem to be the old guard having control over it. They've lost control over it, and I don't see that they've any way that they can resolve this.
Is it a media thing, Paul? You're right. It used to be, and you've heard me say on the show before, that reasonable people don't do these things. This ideology over reason is a very, very dangerous thing. But people compromise. Nobody would damage education. Nobody would refuse to feed children. Nobody would refuse dignity for old people, or for the elderly. And yet all of these things seem to be happening with these Republicans. And this is the kind of, now we know there's gotta be reasonable, moderate Republicans there, but why? I mean, this is not, if you can answer this question, great. Why they have no sway? Do the extremists get all the coverage?
It's the leverage, coverage? Mike. It's the leverage. The Republicans have a rule that they can't bring anything forward in the Congress, and I believe only the Speaker can actually bring something forward in the Congress, unless the caucus majority is in favor of it. Unless it's, you know. So that means that even in a situation like the Speaker, they have to have a majority of the caucus, and sometimes even more than that. And the Tea Party guys, who call themselves the Freedom Caucus, have 40 votes. And so they're blocking it. So what they're doing now is they're blocking the selection of a Speaker of the House. And the way they're blocking it is you just need to have too many votes. In a parliamentary...
Yeah, you got to get to 218.
You got to get 218.
There's 247 okay. Republicans. You got to get to 218 to pass anything in the House. And so these 40 guys have all this power. My prediction, by the way, on Speaker of the House, which I know you asked for...
Yes, I did. I did, Mike.
Is...
Psychically, yes, anyway.
Caretaker. I don't think, because it's a career-ending thing, Paul Ryan isn't going to go near that. He has way more ambition than Speaker of the House of the United States. He's got
presidential.
Exactly. Yeah. He's got Oval Office ambitions. And history has shown, especially modern history, Speaker of the House is a career-ending move. It's over for him if he takes Speaker. People go into the speakership when they're done. They want that vestige of power, which is pretty considerable, as you pointed out, third or fourth in line for the...
Well, look at what Newt Gingrich did as Speaker. He changed the entire political discussion in the United States. I mean, completely. He's changed it from his time forward. It has become a parliamentary style system where the Republicans, thanks to Newt Gingrich, have always now voted as a bloc with very few dissensions. And
they don't basically allow it. The parliamentary system that Gary is talking about is what most of the world has.
And our system is not set up that way.
And we're not set up that way. But in the rest of the world, if you had this situation where you had the Republicans here and you had the Freedom Caucus or the Tea Party there, the Republicans would throw the Tea Party out of the Republican Party. The Tea Party people that would found the Freedom Party, right? Mm-hmm. Run for office as Freedom Party guys. And the Republicans would still have quite a few, and would have to make deals with either the Freedom Party or with the Democratic Party to get things done. That's the parliamentary system. We don't have that here. We have a system set up very, very differently, which is why they can't seem to select a speaker, right?
It's based on, our system is based on compromise between the two parties because we don't have a third or fourth party. That it's necessary to get compromise in Congress. The irony of what's going on is the Freedom Caucus believed Boehner, the guy who couldn't even say the word compromise when prompted repeatedly in an interview on 60 Minutes, he refused to even say the word. It was so despicable to him. The irony is a guy so conservative as Boehner is now considered far too liberal. He was pushed out by the Freedom Caucus.
So what they're saying about the fight is it's between very, very conservative Republican legislatures.
We got to find another one besides conservative. I know conservatives. These people are conservative. These people are ideologically driven to
they're anti-government. They're anti-government.
It's a fight right now. It's a fight between the Republican general. Elected officials, and an even more extreme caucus over tactics. And the real difference is not so much programs, I think. The real difference is whether you really will shut down the government over Planned Parenthood. It's something that nobody in the last generation would even consider anything so
exactly.
silly.
No. This is when Tom usually reaches over and turns down my microphone. Because by this time of the show, I'm starting to get loud. But...
We're going to have Paul take away your microphone.
I just want to point...
But even a socialist like Paul Schwartz, at some time or another, would have said, you know what, I understand, he would have learned in history class, that the government, the U.S. system of government is set up on compromise. We can't say that enough, that reasonable people will come together and find things that are best for people, Republican or Democrat, but that's not happening.
I'd just like to point out that the consequences of this, the last time that the Freedom Caucus shut down government was in 2013, and they did it over the Affordable Care Act. The cost to taxpayers, these people claim to, the Freedom Caucus claims to be deficit hawks. They claim to be really concerned about federal government spending. The last time they shut it down, it cost taxpayers $24 billion. When we refused to, raise the debt ceiling, the last time in 2011, there were all sorts of consequences to businesses, and including one of mine. It literally shut down my business for a year and a half because of fear of what was going to happen. We couldn't get people to purchase, make large purchases anymore. It cost the taxpayers $18 million. Yeah. So these things have serious
million
consequences.
Million or billion, Derek?
Million. Yeah. If that was less. But, okay. But the consequences to private businesses was far greater.
And I think what's interesting is the United States is doing better than the European countries. We have a little better policies. We spent some more money to stimulate the economy. The deficit's been going down at the largest rate in pretty much in the 20th or 21st century. The dollar is extraordinarily strong. There has never been the inflation that Republicans have repeatedly said would exist over and over again. So that we're doing pretty well. We're pulling out of this recession, finally. We've got a decent growth rate, not a good growth rate, but we're doing better than everybody else. And then they want to shut down the government again and throw a monkey wrench into our recovery.
Along these That's lines, true. If I can just want to quickly point out, if Robert Reich was the former labor secretary under Clinton, and he's an economist, teaches at I think UC Berkeley. He does these wonderful little videos to help people understand economics, and he has a wonderful video up now on his website. I would encourage you to visit robertreich.org. And it's three reasons Republican deficit hawks are wrong. And he clearly explains what's going on, and he does it in comparison to the rest of the world. Because we haven't followed what the deficit hawks wanted in this country,
that's right,
and other countries have, they're struggling with their economies, have never recovered from the Great Recession, and ours has. So it's really worthwhile checking out robertreich.org.
Let's create a really artificial governmental crisis that'll throw the economy into difficulty.
People always like simple analogies. If it wasn't for deficit spending, 89A would be a one-way dirt road. I mean, these are the kind you. One of the three things that deficit spending does is it builds up your infrastructure, so everybody has better lives. That's the main reason.
The United States has had deficit spending its whole history.
Well, always.
I mean, some economists think that there's not enough deficit spending now, and because we're not getting enough stimulation to the economy, so the growth rate is 2.5 instead of 4, something like that, Gary.
Right.
If you buy the house you can afford, you're living in a shack, you know, out near the Sedona sewer. Deficit spending is called getting a mortgage and buying a house that's nicer than you can afford.
Another way to look at it is to look at Walmart. You know, Walmart last week took a big hit in their stock prices. If you really analyze what's going on, the conservatives all want to blame it on the fact that they increased the salaries for their employees. And that's why their profits were down and their stock, prices went down. The reality is that because of poverty in this country, the lack of increase in salaries, driven by deficit hawks, and the refusal to raise the minimum wage, really, a lot of economists are pointing out that Walmart is struggling because their audience, their customers, can no longer afford to buy as much at Walmart because they just aren't making enough. So when you look at a stimulus, if you put the money, if you raise people's wages and you give them money to spend, they spend it. They don't save it like the uber rich, the 1%. They actually spend it on education and on groceries, things like that. That increases the income of the businesses, which then pay more taxes, and the economy grows. If you keep cutting and refusing to raise wages, it's an inevitable downward spiral.
So why is Costco a big success? At the same time, Walmart's kind of
because
eating the crapper, and Costco pays wages, I think, $17 an hour.
That would be news to Walmart that they're in the crapper, but go ahead.
I don't mean it literally.
Costco's beginning wage is well above the minimum wage. It's $11.30 an hour, and there was I was reading an article on the CEO who said, there is great benefit in paying a greater salary in that I don't have to go out and keep replacing people who leave for other jobs. I have great loyalty amongst my employees. They're happier. They work better. They're more efficient. And that rubs off on customers.
What a concept.
Do we want to go to predictions of what's going to happen in this the impasse? What's going to happen with? Are we ever going to see an end to this ferocious? It's almost like all the hatred that was once directed against minorities is now directed against the federal government, and so much of the criticism is irrational, and over the top. Is this ever going to end? Are we ever going to return to the old dynamics or some kind of new dynamics which doesn't consist of destroying the government?
I think this is a very, very odd time in history. And I think we're going to, 100 years from now, people are going to be reading about it and they're going to be talking about it. There'll be seminars on this time of history. Just like the Golden Age, people compare it to the robber barons and that time period in the early 1900s when government became so dysfunctional, when corporations had much more power than the government. In other words, instead of government regulating business, corporations regulate the government. I think that's where we are now. Americans for Prosperity, the Koch brothers, Sinclair, we got Edelman. We have lots of people that have more power than the skinny black guy in the Oval Office, at least domestically.
I don't think it's, personally, I don't think it's going to end unless we solve the dark money issue where people like the Koch brothers and Edelman can buy candidates because they don't, you know, they dislike the government. They're supporting candidates that will try to tear the federal government apart. And I'd like to also point out that this has been a long time coming. This hatred of the federal government was initiated by Ronald Reagan. When he made his famous quote, I don't remember it exactly.
The government is the problem.
The government is, you know, the most fearful issue is words are, I'm from the government and I'm here to help you.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, you know, I think if you look back 100 years, these 42 guys are anarchists. We've always had this. These guys don't. They come from safe districts. They cannot be defeated in any election. They never will be because of the gerrymandering that took place years ago. So what do they have to lose? They have absolutely nothing to lose, and they see themselves in a very similar light to anarchists 100 years ago. Just bring it down and let's have some fun, and we'll see what happens after that. I don't think this is going to end in any bad way, but they are not going to stop.
What Paul is saying is absolutely true, and leads to when people talk about a broken system, you hear liberals talk about broken system, you hear Republicans talk about broken system, and usually they're talking about different things. This part of the broken system is the Republican controls of all those state legislatures for the last many years. And the scientific process that has been applied to gerrymandering for these incredibly safe districts. There's always been gerrymandering. Both parties do it. But the thanks to the computer, the science that has been applied to modern gerrymandering and creating these safe Republican districts, and there's just more. So that part of the, so they don't have the normal fear of being voted out of office. Think about it. I mean, everybody else that's a representative of a district has at least in somewhere in their mind that they could be voted in or out if they don't raise enough money, if they don't follow. But no, these guys don't worry about it. They don't have that. So that's a broken system.
I think I sort of to some degree, extent agree with Gary that the dark money, we have a little argument, little proposal here about a monument in Sedona area, and we have dark money coming in. There's a fight up in Utah where, do you really want the state government of Utah to take over public lands?
I do want to do crazy. I'm sorry, I'm going to interrupt. I want to do a public service announcement with two.
How many public service announcements?
This is just one. The ballots for the Mingus bond election were in error. The new ones will be mailed out today. There was an error. There was an error. Paul Tye, the superintendent of Mingus, caught the error on the ballot. So if you're sitting at, I don't want to give any advice here other than that the county, Yavapai County, will be mailing out new bonds. It's a Clarkdale and Mingus bond being mailed out today.
I'll give some advice. Vote yes.
Okay.
For the bond.
Vote yes on the bond.
Our schools can use all the money they can
get. But as far as old ballot, new ballot, that's all I'm telling you is what was in the print newspaper that the ballots have been mailed out. The correct ballots have been mailed out today. We want to thank Democrats of the, what do they call them? Democrats of the Red Rocks, who had a wonderful picnic a while back.
Yep.
And a fine breakfast meeting last week.
And a fine breakfast with, I'm going to have those guys on the show.
Yeah, yeah. We are.
Tell
we're
going to
have them on the show.
The Arizona Advocacy Network.
Yeah. What do they advocate for?
It's for good government and they're a nonpartisan group.
Yeah, and then we're going to have Sandy Barr from the Sierra Club. She's the head of the executive director of the Sierra Club here in Arizona on in about 2 weeks on November 2nd. We're looking
Queen of the tree huggers.
What?
The queen of the tree huggers.
Sandy's pretty tough.
Moving on.
Pretty tough cookie.
Yes.
Yeah, tune in next week. We'll be here, and even Mike will be here.
Maybe. VVID.org is where you can find our podcast, VVID, and listen to us online and tune in radio.
been listening to Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show focusing on the political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and the nation at large. Catch us every Monday morning after the 8 o'clock news, right here on AM 780 KAZM. It's beautiful out there, folks. Have a great day.